Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Lord, we are fortunate because the heavy burden of the demons upon this earth is immediately removed by your appearance. Indeed, we are certainly fortunate, for we shall be able to see upon this earth and in the heavenly planets the marks of the lotus, conch shell, club, and disc that adorn your lotus feet. Purport. The soles of the lotus feet are marked with Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, conch shell, disc, club, and lotus, and also by a flag and a thunderbolt. When Krishna walks on this earth or in the heavenly planets, these marks are visible wherever he goes. Vrindavan Dham is a transcendental place because of Krishna's walking on this land frequently. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were fortunate to see these marks here and there. When Akrura went to Vrindavan to see Krishna and Balaram away to take Krishna and Balaram away to the festival arranged by Kamsa, upon seeing the marks of the Lord's feet on the ground of Vrindavan, he fell down and began to groan. These marks are visible to devotees who receive the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Tavanukampitam. The demigods were jubilant, not only because the appearance of the Supreme Lord would do away with the burdensome demons, but also because they would be able to see upon the ground the transcendental marks from the soles of the Lord's lotus feet. The gopis also thought of the Lord's lotus feet when he was walking in the pasturing grounds, and as described in the previous verse, simply by thinking of the Lord's lotus feet, the gopis were fully absorbed in transcendence, avista chaitana bhavaya kalpate. Like the gopis, one who is always absorbed in the thoughts of the Lord is beyond the material platform and will not remain in this material world. It is our duty, therefore, always to hear, chant, and think about the Lord's lotus feet, as actually done by Vaishnavas who have decided to live in Vrindavan always and think of the Lord's lotus feet 24 hours a day. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksuran Malitanjena Tasme Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Guran Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sachivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Aripriye Vanchakalpa Trubhyuscha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasari Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So these are absolutely amazing verses praised by the demigods. Actually, this is the 10th canto, and Prabhupada explains that without reading the nine cantos, you cannot read the 10th cantos. The first canto is considered the feet of the Supreme Personality of God, Godhead. So when you look at Krishna's feet, then gradually when we become qualified as we are reading the 9 cantos, then gradually we come up to the face. And it appears all of us here have read all of the 9 cantos, and we're here listening to the 10th canto, I assume. I might have read it, but my memory is like a surface, nothing, no memories of all the 9 cantos. So we have to take the blessings of all the acharyas, all the Vaishnavas, to be able to understand this very summum bonum of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the highest you can get. So, first of all, we need to take blessings from all the devotees and Guru Parampara to be able to speak, because it's a very esoteric, very high subject matter of the Supreme Lord. So here it's explained that the soles of the Lord's lotus feet are marked with Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma, Conch shell, disc, club, and lotus, and also a flag and a thunderbolt. But actually, it doesn't stop here. The Lord has 19 markings on his feet. And although this book might be a little controversial, but it's not really controversial, because Mahanidhi Swami is not, you know, within the movement. But all the weapons or whatever Krishna carries in his hands, each one, the 19, are given detail in this book. It's amazing how each of the weapons that Krishna carries in his hand helps us overcome, you know, the pain and the sufferings in this material world, and how we can get blessings from some of these the markings, you know, all these markings that are on the lotus feet of the Lord. I'm afraid I'm going to be reading a little bit, because I can't memorize everything, there's 19 markings, and I think I will do justice to this verse and the purport by actually going through the 19 markings on Krishna's feet. And if we listen very, very carefully, and then we will understand how these markings will actually help us in our everyday life in Krishna consciousness. Because each of these markings have a purpose. The conch shell, the disc, the lotus, each one of these markings has a purpose. And we will hear how the purpose of these markings can actually take us home back to Godhead. And this, we're talking about worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord. Actually, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, Prabhupada explains in many purports in the same chapter, that worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord is hearing, chanting, and remembering. Those are the 3 things. And remembering means Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. That's the reason we are here in this material world. And if we take to this process, hearing, chanting, remembering, and understanding the name, form, qualities, and Krishna's pastimes, we can go back home, back to Godhead. That's it. So we will just go systematically with all the markings and give like a little brief description of how the markings help us in our daily life. I think it's very, very important. Even the Guru Vastinkam prayers we sing, Guru Vandana prayers we sing, about 3 or 4 times lotus feet is mentioned. Prabhupada's lotus feet. The lotus feet, our spiritual master, are the only way to, you know, to overcome this material suffering. So just bear with me. See, all the teachers that are teaching every day, like, what's his name, Praveen, you know, and in the Chaitanya Sutapa, when you're teaching, you can imbibe the message more clearly. You get purification just by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. When you're doing other services, you're trying to find time to do reading or chant. Well, of course, you have to do your chanting every day. But for me, reading seems to be the last in the line of my practices and devotional service. And that's not how it should be. From reading comes purification and clearance of the mind and the body and the soul. So if we have a taste for reading, then Prabhupada even says, if you don't understand my books, how you can distribute them? You won't be able to distribute them. You have to have knowledge of the books to be able to understand. So I pray that someday I have this taste to pick up a book and get absorbed. Even my spiritual master tell me, you don't just read a book, you study it. You absorb it and you digest it. So in this way, you can actually walk your talk. You can actually preach this to other people and you get enlivened through reading it yourself. So let's see what each one of the markings say. Now all these markings, which are 19 in number, they're taken from the Skanda Purana, the Matsya Purana, all different Puranas, so they're very authentic. So Krishna is holding the conch shell. The conch shell is actually a symbol of victory. It explains that those who take shelter of the lotus feet are always saved from all distress, awarded with fearlessness. They become fearless and they free from distress, it says. And as this, the conch shell holds the water of the Supreme Lord and washes their feet, then similarly, this divine water, this Amrita, extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence. So the water we're taking, this conch shell, we're offering water to the Lord. So the water we're taking actually extinguishes the fire of material desires. This is the conch shell. It brings victory. And when we drink the water that's offered to the Lord, then it decreases our material desires. We have the mode of passion. We want things. We want to enjoy. We want to enjoy the material world separate from Krishna. So when this water, this Amrita that is offered to the Lord, it kind of extinguishes that, you know, fire. And then next, Krishna has a flag. And it's explained that this flag that Krishna has, it announces security. Announces security and protection from fear. The fish, also got a fish. A fish cannot exist out of the water. The fish cannot live on dry land. So it's explained here, the heart has to be moist and liquid as the fish, because this fish wants to be in water all the time, not on dry land. So one needs to become liquefied, not like solid ice. You have to become liquefied by the loving mellows to attract Krishna's lotus feet. See, we have to have so much love and affection for Krishna that our heart becomes liquefied like, you know, melted butter or melted ice, like that it has to become to be attracted to his feet, which means we have to try and get rid of all the anathas that's in the heart, purified by hearing, doesn't happen overnight. Hearing, chanting, remembering, Prabhupada says in the purport at the end, 24 hours a day, like how people, devotees, Vaishnavas are living in Vrindavan. They're thinking, they're going on parikrams, hearing, chanting, like that. And Prabhupada said, if you do the same thing here, in the West or anywhere else you are away from the holy dhams, and if you do these things, then you're like in Vrindavan, what's the difference? You're doing exactly the same thing as the people are living in Vrindavan. So the fish, which is the insignia on Cupid's flag, on Krishna's foot, excite the gopis with desires for amorous pastimes, because their love for Krishna is so liquefied, so melted like the butter. They love him so much with all, not all in reverence, just spontaneous devotional service, that it increases this liquefied butter like in the heart, increases the desires to be with Krishna and his pastimes. It also indicates that Krishna has conquered Cupid, because there's a marking of Cupid as well on his feet. So in the material world, when we look at somebody, they say love at first sight. We'll use this terminology in the material world, love at first sight. So Cupid actually shoots an arrow at a particular individual, and then we become attracted. Sometimes we don't care whether the person is married, whether they're single, whether they have children, whether they're old, whether they're young, whether they're ugly, whether they're beautiful. Doesn't matter. And sometimes we may say, how comes this person, you know, is attracted to this person? This person is so old, or this person, be all on the bodily platform, you know. But this indicates Cupid is in Krishna's feet. He's in Krishna's feet because Krishna's conquered even Cupid, like that. So then you've got the lotus. The lotus is nectar filled with lotus, creates green greed for prema. This lotus that Krishna holds in his hand actually creates greed for his love. Lolam. Lolam is greed. So the minds of the devotees have to be like bees looking for the honey, it's explained. Not like the flies, you know, flying around looking for stool and unwanted, dirty things. So anyone, any devotees who meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord, they are like these bees going from flower to flower looking for honey, looking for, The lotus, the symbol of Lakshmi, indicates that devotees who remember Krishna's lotus feet, will always be successful and fortunate. Whenever we think of Krishna's lotus feet, there's always victory, there's fortune, we'll always be successful. But as devotees, we have to understand, the first thing we need to understand is there's no dualities in the material world. As devotees, we have to understand happiness and distress come and go. Matras passes to Kuntiya, Sitosna Sukha Dukada. They come and go, they like winter and summer season, they come from sense perception, and one who understands this, then they act out of intelligence to be able to accept. Prabhupada said, one should accept everything that happens in one's life as Krishna's plan. Not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anything that happened to us, whether it's pain, pleasure, suffering, anything that happens, how can we experience worse suffering than Prahlad Maharaj? When we're undergoing so-called pain or suffering, we should think of the acharyas and representatives of the Supreme Lord. And I always think of the example of Prahlad Maharaj. He was a young boy, only a young boy. And what did he do? All he was doing was preaching love of God, preaching about Krishna, talking about, you know, how to be a good person, how to love God. This is what, and he was persecuted for it. So, I mean, his example of punishment is so extreme, but I don't know if we can. Krishna only gives us what we can handle. So, could we handle? I mean, are we so purified that we can handle being thrown off a cliff in boiling oil. No, we're not so advanced as yet, but we're still trying. We're trying slowly to get them. So that is the lotus. It means that one who always meditates on the lotus feet of Krishna will soon become fortunate, because Krishna grants boons by the lotus, by the use of the lotus. So whatever we have in our mind, we're thinking of, and Krishna uses this lotus flower to actually benefit us from our spiritual thoughts to make advancement. So we can meditate on the lotus like this. So Krishna also has a bow on his feet. This mark reveals that those who take shelter of the lotus feet of Shyam will perpetually be free from all varieties of difficulties. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Yeah, so we have to remember that this bow will perpetually be freed from all varieties. It also indicates that when the mind of the devotee meets the target of his feet, then prema condenses as a result and overflows as tears showering from their eyes. It's very esoteric, very high kind of explanation of the bow. So when we look at the feet of the Supreme Lord, then this love, it manifests itself just like a lotus, you know, blooming. Prabhupada talks about steel-framed heart. If for so many years we hearing, we chanting, we remembering, we reading in the association of devotees, taking prasadam, and we're doing all these things, and when we come in front of Radha and Krishna, we look at the fate, at least our heart doesn't soften out of appreciation, little bit of love, or even appreciation for the devotees that dress the Lord, for the devotees that adorn them with jewelry, for the devotees that are doing the altar. Even if we appreciate the devotees that are doing the service, that is a big benefit for us if we can't get to the love and affection for the Supreme Lord. So this bow actually condenses our love for Krishna, increases our love for Krishna. So then the goat denotes that meditation on Krishna's feet brings the elephants. A goat is like a long whip with a hook. It's used to control elephants or other big animals. So this goat is actually used to control the mind. And there's also a triangle on Krishna's lotus feet. Devotees who take shelter of Krishna's feet get saved from the snares of the three modes of material nature. This is the triangle, the three modes of material nature. They get shelter. The lotus feet of Krishna is the last refuge for the inhabitants of the three worlds. We take shelter of the lotus feet, which is hearing, chanting, remembering. Then we get refuge from the three worlds. Krishna's lotus feet are the safest sanctuary for the demigods, for the humans and animals as well. It's explained. Everyone should resort to Krishna's lotus feet with full concentration, the body, mind and words. Even Lord Shiva, it's explained, even Lord Shiva with his three eyes, his gaze is fixed on Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Is the book? What was that? Where Lord Shiva is talking to Parvati and is glorifying Krishna to Parvati. What's that book called? I can't remember. Anyway, Krishna also has barley corn grain on his feet, and the barley corn signifies that devotees receive all enjoyable opulence by serving Krishna. So all the grains, all the abundance that we get, food grains, the fruits, the vegetables, anything that we get is this marking on Krishna's feet. It's the barley. It gives nourishment to the body, the soul, this corn. One finds shelter there. It's explained that after many, many births and deaths, just like the barley, which is cut, its life is cut short, just like that grain of barley, as barley grains sustain life for living beings, similarly, the glorious feet of Krishna are the fullest nourishment for all souls. Therefore, the acharyas, great saints and sages, they can live without eating. They would eat a leaf or they would drink some water and they would sustain their life as. And this is because they have taken, they are like, they sustain their existence just by remembering the glories of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. That's how it is. Krishna also has a marking of an altar on his feet. So this altar proclaims that the sins of those who meditate on Krishna's feet are burned up as if on the altar of sacrifice, yajna. Any sacrifice we do, we offer grains, we offer oblations to the fire. So in this way, this altar on the feet of Krishna actually proclaims the sin, takes away the sin. It burns the sin. Just as we throw in grains in the fire and the fire burns the grains. So just like that, our sins are burnt. And it also explains that the eternal loving service of Krishna, rather than Krishna's lotus feet, is the ultimate goal of all austerities. Whatever austerities we're performing, whatever vrat, whatever dana, yajnas, penance, vows, charity, sacrifice, any austerity that we're performing, but the lotus feet, worshipping the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, hearing, chanting, and remembering, this covers all of this. Penance, vows, charity, sacrifice. But we do these for our purification. We can't jump to the top. We perform sacrifices, austerities, for our purification. It's like for so many lifetimes we've been around in this material world. So we need that purification. Hence we fast on Ekadashis. And, you know, we fast on festival days like that just to get some purification. But it explains that, you know, just worshipping, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, this covers everything, penance, vows, charity, and sacrifices. So there's also a half moon on Krishna's lotus feet, marking of a half moon. It signifies that the demigods, like Lord Shiva, have decorated their own heads with the soles of Krishna's feet. All the demigods, they actually, like Lord Shiva, he's got a half moon on his head. It also indicates that devotees who likewise decorate their own heads with the lotus feet, like tilak, we put tulsi leaf, decorate their own heads, can become exalted pure devotees like Lord Shiva. So when we wear tilak, it's not ordinary. We mark our bodies, all these things. Similarly, the soothing lotus feet shower nectar upon the devotees. Now also, it extinguishes the threefold miseries, material miseries, just by putting the markings tilak in our body. It means that the real moon has shriveled up in shame and appears in half form before the splendorous full moons of their lustrous toenails. Sometimes Krishna's toenails are described as the moon or pearls. So Krishna's toenails are so beautiful that it actually shrinks the full moon into half. And he's got this half moon on his lotus feet to show how he can control even the moon. his Sunday's soles of his feet. So there's also an upcurving line on his feet, upcurving line, and this mark signifies that devotees who cling to the lotus feet as if holding on to a lifeline will be transported to the spiritual world. We have to hold on for life, irrespective of what happens. There's so many things that are going on in this material world. We're not happy with the politics. There's so much bureaucracy. There's so much this, so much that. There's umpteen things that we think about that are detrimental to our own Krishna consciousness. But our focus should be fixed, irrespective of what goes on. Therefore, we talk about lotus. All the time we talk about lotus. Lotus eyes, lotus flower, lotus feet. Why? Because the lotus grows on the water. Although it's in the water, but it's not touched. So we, in this material world, although we are living in this material world, and it's called the Kaliyam, it's a place of misery and suffering and pain, at the same time, we should be like the lotus, in there, but not touched by it, not touched by everything that goes on around us. Focus, fixed in determination, irresolute fact. So that should be our motivation. No matter what happens in our life, we should have, they say, one-track-minded. For Krishna, we can be one-track-minded. Wear blinkers. Don't see this way, don't see that way. Look at the goal. Everything that happens around us is temporary. It's not going to last. No matter what difficulties we are in, how much pain, how much dishonor, how much criticism, whatever we go through, is all temporary. It's all for our purification in some way or the other. There's no one to blame for this. We shouldn't be looking for scapegoats in our journey to go back home, back to God. This is a journey we're going. Like when Narada Muni was walking and walking and walking in search of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In due course of time, he heard a voice. And he heard a voice. He was so overwhelmed and so excited. But that voice said, "You're not ready yet." Because he was still attracted to some things on the path that he was traversing. Beautiful lakes, beautiful mountains, you know. So these are all around us in this material world. We have to be, actually, whatever is there, if we can meditate on it as being Krishna's, then we look at the moon. We're thinking of the story, how the moon shrunk when it's half moon, because it's in Krishna's feet. And we're looking at bows, we're looking at arrows, we're looking at the lotus, everything that we look at in this material world, if it reminds us of Krishna, then we're getting purified from our material existence. I'm going on too long, yeah. I'll just go very quickly down. It's half a day fast. Can I go a little over time? Yeah. Okay, the upcurving line, it indicates that the path of Krishna is very direct. The upcurving line is direct to him and narrow like a razor's edge. So both things are there. It's straight, but at the same time, it's very sharp. And we'll be able to overcome the pain, the sharpness of this razor cutting us. Prabhupada would say, if you're looking in the mirror, for a man, if he's looking in the mirror, he's having a shave, if he takes a little attention from what he's shaving, he can, you know, cut himself. So we have to be vigilant, fixed, and conscious. First be conscious, then we can be Krishna conscious. We have to be conscious of our everyday activities. And don't think about what you did yesterday, what you did last year, what happened the year before. And all these things play on the mind. It's Maya's tricks to bring us down. Don't worry about history. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said the past is history. Don't even worry about the future. Don't even worry about what happened this morning. Worry about now. the now. What am I doing now? Am I Krishna conscious now? What am I doing? Am I gossiping or am I, you know, looking for some sense gratification? Am I looking for the bad? You know, whatever. Actually, I was thinking, there's no comfort zone in the material world. We talk about comfort zone. There's no kind of comfort zone. Maya gives you a big kick on the back as soon as you get into a comfort zone, so-called comfort zone. Krishna reminds you through Maya that you're not in a comfort zone. So, you know, Krishna is very kind in that to his devotees, he gives special mercy. But that kick from Maya should be a learning lesson for us. We shouldn't take it at, oh, this, you know, why am I suffering? It's not fair. We always say it's not fair. Why me? Why me? No, we should embrace our pain like Queen Kunti. Someone asked a question to one Maharaj when he was giving class. You know, how can we be like Queen Kunti? You know, ask for trouble, ask for suffering so we can remember Krishna. And the Maharaj said, you don't even have to ask for suffering. Automatically, it's there for us. So Queen Kunti was praying, was suffering. But for us, we don't have to pray. Every day we're experiencing one problem or the other. But we need to learn to detach ourselves from this suffering and pleasure and pain. That's the upcurving line. Then the water pots. This mark means that Krishna's feast holds the golden pot of pure nectar to freely be consumed by surrendered souls. And then you got the disc. The disc indicates that the meditation about the lotus feet cuts down the six enemies. This is the disc. If we're meditating on Krishna's disc, then we have to think how he's cutting down the six enemies: lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya. These are the six kind of enemies this disc indicates. And if we're thinking of disc, we have to pray to Krishna, please use this disc to cut off this lust, anger, greed, whatever we have in our heart, please. We cannot do it ourselves. We have to cry for the mercy to be able to flee from lust, anger, and greed, envy, all that. And these automatically come to us. We don't ask for it. It's, you know, it grows in the heart. And before it takes over, we need prayer to get rid of it. And the circles, concentric circles, this mark represents the sky. There's a circle on Krishna's feet. Though Krishna's feet is everywhere, they are unattached to just one place, just like the sky. It's not attached to being just in England or India. It's all over. The world is spread out. So Krishna's feet is like that. It's like a circle. It's spread all over. At the same time, Krishna is outside of everything and everyone, eternally enjoying the loving embraces of his devotees in Vraj. So he can be inside, outside, he can be in Vraj, he can be anywhere he likes. There's no special place. And he can be in two places at the same time. Like Narada Muni once, he was a bit confused. I want to check how Krishna, you know, is with all his wife at the same time, 16,108 wives. How is it possible he can give pleasure to all his wives at the same time? So he went visiting the palaces. When he went visiting, he saw Krishna playing. So some palaces he was embracing his wife, some palaces he was playing with his kids. It was every palace he was, you know, intimately involved with his family. So Narada Muni understood that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So umbrella, Krishna also has the umbrella on his feet. Those who take shelter of this feet are protected from the incessant rainfall of material miseries. So this, like it's raining now. we don't take shelter of umbrella, what happens? We get very wet, and then tomorrow we wake up with a cold, flu, cough, whatever it is, and we can't do our service. And what happens? We lose out on devotional service because we don't take protection to look after this, maintain this body. Prabhupada said we have to maintain the body, our health, to maintain our service. So it's very important. And this umbrella is to take shelter of the lotus feet. And just like how this material world gives us so much material miseries, this umbrella is that shelter. Just one or two more. And there's also a cow's hoof print on his feet. It signifies that those who take full shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, the vast ocean of material existence becomes as small and insignificant as the water held in the hoof print of a cow. Thus, it can be easily crossed. Therefore, that verse 2:14, Daivi Isha Gunamai Mama Maya Durachaya. Krishna says, this divine energy of mine is very, very difficult to overcome. But if we take shelter of him, then we can cross beyond it. It's not odd. And in the purport, I think Prabhupada talks about a hoof sprint. It explained that this cow's hoof sprint is like, when you take shelter of Krishna, then when we have miserable condition, we can deal with it. The thunderbolt, this mark proves that meditation on lotus feet smashes to pieces the mountains of devotees' karmic reactions to past sins. So every time, these weapons that are in Krishna's hands is not only to kill demons, it is there to kill the demons within our heart. We have all these demons within our heart, like lust, anger, greed. These are all personified demons that are in the heart that cause us problems. So Krishna with these weapons also kills these demons within our hearts. So he says he smashes to pieces the mountain of a devotee's karmic reactions to past sins. So much sins, so many lifetimes, millions of lifetimes of ours. So Krishna uses this thunderbolt to smash if we take shelter of his lotus feet. And then the chariot, this mark shows that the chariot of the mind can be easily controlled by fixing it on Krishna's feet. Indicates that Krishna is so merciful to his devotees that he even becomes a chariot driver for them. Like Arjuna, and Krishna became a chariot, Parthasarathi. So swastika, there's a swastika that shows that nothing inauspicious can come to one who cherishes Krishna's lotus feet in his heart. It shows that nothing inauspicious can come to one who cherishes Krishna's feet in his heart. Sometimes when we have problems, when we have suffering, and we think there's a contradiction, what is this that it says, nothing inauspicious can come, but now my child died, or I'm having a problem, I'm getting divorced, my husband this, my husband that, my children. What is this? How can this be auspicious by worshipping Krishna's feet? But it's not like that. It's how you overcome the dualities of this material world. That is the auspiciousness. When you have these difficulties, this problem, and you can take shelter of Krishna without being affected, then that is auspiciousness. Does that make sense? All these things will be, this pain, this suffering will go on irrespective of what goes on in our life. But if we can accept it, embrace it with intelligence, understanding that Krishna's feet is the ultimate and not be affected by it, then that is auspiciousness. When we can come to that stage, then we know that, we're making some spiritual advancement. As long as we are attached to all the suffering around this material world, then that we need to go under more purification in our existence in this material world to attain the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. But we need to strive and keep going. That's the idea. Octagon, this mark symbolizes those who worship Krishna's feet and are well protected in the eight directions. Blackberry fruits, jambu, is also in his feet. This mark shows that Krishna's lotus feet are the only worshipable object for the residents of Jambudvip, island of blackberry. I didn't know there's blackberry island. Jambudvip is the island of blackberry, by the way, according to Vedic cosmography. That's the lot, I'm afraid. Yeah, that's the blackberry fruit is the last marking on Krishna's lotus feet. And therefore, we have to take complete shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, and that is through hearing, chanting, and remembering his name, his form, his qualities, and pastime, and preaching his glories. Preaching his glories means going out, picking out books, reading, sankirtan, all these things. That's some beautiful classes of this week about, you know, sankirtan and about Krishna's feet. So we have to take hold of this and embrace it in our heart and keep moving. And prayer. Prayer is a must. We have to pray, cry, pray to get rid of all the anattas in our hearts. We can't do it ourselves, just by the mercy of devotees. It's explained that Krishna hears more to somebody else that prays for them than when we pray ourselves. We pray ourselves, but I'll tell you a little story. In Krishna book, there was five wives of Krishna that was telling story how they got Krishna as their husband. And one of them was Kalindi. Kalindi was, she was in the forest and she was completely meditating on Krishna, wanting him to be her husband. And then when Arjuna and Krishna went to the forest after Kurukshetra war, they went to take some rest and they saw this beautiful girl. And Krishna said to Arjuna, go and see what she's doing, because how can she be in the forest, this beautiful young girl in the forest this time in the night? Go and see what she wants, what she's doing. And then Arjuna went. And Arjuna, instead of asking her what she wants, he asked her, how can I satisfy you? What do you want to for? And then she explained, no, I've been meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna for so long, and now he's here. And it's explained shastically. She says to Arjuna, it's explained that when one prays for somebody else, it's more potent, it's more beneficial than one prays for himself. So Arjuna, you go to Krishna and please tell him that I've been meditating on him. Please ask him if he will marry me. So when Arjuna went back and told Krishna that, Krishna went immediately, lifted her up, put him in his chariot, took her to Dwarka and had a most amazing wedding. He married Kalindi. So normally we hear devotees saying, please pray for me. So now we know where it comes from. Please pray for me. Please pray for me, Prabhu. You know, we're always asking for blessings, for prayers. So this story, when I read, I thought, okay, this is where it's coming from. When somebody else prays for you, you get more mercy. So we should always ask the Vaishnavas for mercy and try to practice humility and take shelter of all the devotees. Rantarajshrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. I'll just speak like, 5 minutes, Rasikananda and Jagannanda Pandit. Jagannath Das Babaji. Sorry, where did I put my notes? Okay. Amazing. These are examples of Vaishnavas, Babajis, that have taken complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rasikananda Babaji was from southwest Bengal, now known as Bangladesh. He was born in the 1700s. And it explains that he was very strong-built, was very handsome, and he came from a princely order, very rich person. So in his early life, he went in search of spiritual life. Then it's described in the Bhakti Ratnaka about description of his life. And once he heard a voice in the sky telling him that very soon you will find your spiritual master. And so he did. He found his spiritual master, who was Shyamananda Prabhu. He surrendered to his guru and he traveled all round and preached. He was so good at preaching that he made he spread the Vaishnava cult to kings and dacoits who became his disciple. And there was a wave of Vaishnava culture began to spread all over Bengal and Orissa through his preaching. When the Muslims attacked that time, the pujaris in one temple called Gopinath, they took the deity and they hid the deity in a pond. And then So he took this deity and he hid it in a pond. He came in a dream to Rasikananda Prabhu. He came in a dream. Gopinath deity told him that I am in a pond, come and take me. So he retrieved this deity and he established the deity in a temple. And at the end of his life, he disappeared at the lotus feet. So this is representative of serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Rasikananda disappeared at the lotus feet of Gopinath. And there he had seven associates who were with him, playing kartals and murdangas and all that during the kirtan. And when they saw that Rasikananda disappeared through the lotus feet of the Lord, they were so overwhelmed, they dropped all the kartals, they dropped the murdangas, and they dropped the bodies on the floor, and they left the bodies as well, all seven of them, associates. And then in that place, they couldn't build a samadhi for Rasikananda because his body wasn't there, that they built like a Pushpa samadhi and for him and the seven associates. And this is a place in Orissa. It's called Ramuna if you want to visit there. The ashram is still there. Jan Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj was born in the 1750s. He was a very intimate associate of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually took him as a Shiksha Guru. Very early in his childhood, he was attracted to Krishna. And when he was... my legs are hurting. And when he was older, he went to Vrindavan and lived in the forest for a very long time, absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. In 1880, Bhaktivinoda Thakur went to Vrindavan, and when he first met Jagannath Das Babaji, he was attracted straight away, and they formed a very strong bond, was very attached to each other. And Jagannath Das Babaji, when he saw the urgency of preaching in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he blessed him and instructed him about the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So Jagannath Das Babaji left Vrindavan at the age of 130 and for Navadvip. And a wealthy person heard about him. He's called Madhava Dutta, was impressed with the Babaji, so he purchased a land for him in Navadvip. And when he purchased it, he wasn't interested. Jagannath Das Babaji was very full of humility and, very humble. So, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he took it on himself. He built two huts on this plot of land. And then the two huts today is developed into the present-day Jagannath Das Babaji's Mat. It's there in Navadvip. So that was Bhaktivinoda Thakur establishing something for Jagannath Das Babaji. And once when Bhaktivinoda Thakur looked across the Ganges, he saw this, he had a vision of lights coming out from across the Ganges, and then he had this vision of people chanting and dancing in ecstasy from all over the world. Everyone from all over the world were dancing there. And he couldn't understand what it was. This light was coming and chanting and hearing, and you know, from people from all over the world dancing. So he couldn't understand. So when he went over the next day to see what it was, and then that's the time when he saw a big neem tree there with Tulsi Devi growing all around this neem tree. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to confirm that this was Lord Chaitanya's birthplace, he went to inquire from Jagannath Das Babaji to confirm that this was the actual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So Jagannath Das Babaji was carried, normally he was over 130, he was carried in a little basket, and his servant was called Bihari. He's carrying Jagannath Das Babaji on his head inside this basket. And it explains that Bihari was very strong. He took him everywhere in this little basket. And Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, he was so bended over, it's explained that his body was double, like the leg and the head, like, and all the time hearing and chanting. And this is how he was at the in the basket. So when Bihari took him to the place where Lord Chaitanya was born to confirm that this is the place, he went there. As soon as they came to the place, Jagannath Das Babaji jumped out of the basket. From the head, he jumped out of the basket, and he was dancing in ecstasy. And it explains that he rose to 6 foot tall, like almost like Lord Chaitanya, and he was dancing in ecstasy around it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur took it that this is the actual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. And that was that's little pastime, but all the pastimes are there in different, you know, volumes of books. So it's 10 to. Am I allowed to take questions, or it's too late? Ananda Nandan. 1, 2. Anyone has anything? Yeah.
The spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati?
No, Gaurkishordas Babaji. Gaurkishordas Babaji was the spiritual master of Bhaktisiddhanta. And
spiritual master was Jagannath.
Whose Bhaktivinoda was the Shiksha Guru. He didn't take initiation from Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. He was his Shiksha Guru. Yeah, he took. Yes. He's at the end, the last picture.
Whose spiritual master is he?
He was. I'm not sure. I'm sorry. There was Uddhava and Madhavananda. There's others in that line, but I didn't want to go too much because there's not much time. I didn't study too much on that. Jagannath Das Babaji.
He did not initiate anybody of. You know,
he had no followers. Yeah, like Gaurkishore Das Babaji, he didn't want followers as well. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati pushed him to accept. He said he'll commit suicide if he wasn't accepted. So that's the reason, because he was so determined to take initiation from Gaurkishore Das, then he let it happen. So, anything else?